Hey, what's going on? Welcome to The Doug Show. My name's Doug Cunnington. And in this episode, we're going to talk to my friend Cody Berman. And we recorded this live at a hotel room that I was in a couple years ago. And this is one of those rebroadcast episodes from my other podcast called Mile High Fi. And it was at FinCon in Orlando in 2023. I don't know. It's all a blur now. And it's fun to record in person. It's just a little bit different. In fact, for Mile High Fi, I really try to record in person in the studio or on location. In this case, I had my little studio set up in my hotel room. So me and Cody are sitting there, and my friend Carl, who used to co-host with me over on Mile High Fi. And basically, there's a good overlap here because we do talk personal finance and financial independence over on Mile High Fi. However, Cody is an entrepreneur, and we talk about the 19 streams of income that he has. And I mean, I think maybe he sliced and diced them pretty thin there. So 19 is a lot. I think maybe there's some that you can group together, but still, it's a lot of sources of income. And the thing is, Cody's so young that it's insane, like how well he made decisions and leveraged his investments. So he goes through many different areas. He's been on the show several times before, and we typically talk about his Etsy printable shop, and he's still doing that. But anyway, we get into why he left his like real job right after college, after about 7 months. He saved up money. He's always been a hustler. How he discovered the FIRE movement and essentially, like, you know, not retired early, but he's basically an entrepreneur. So he left the corporate world and basically was like, I want to build businesses on my own. He has his own podcast called The FI Show, Financial Independence Show. And we talk about his perfect day as well. So this is a fun interview. Cody's awesome. He has put out content in many different places. We'll also link up to his printables business. And just a few weeks ago, we interviewed someone that I interviewed someone that is now working with Cody because she had a specific way that she was successful on Etsy. And her name's Emily. Again, that was just a few episodes ago, back on February 3rd, Doug Show number 550. And we go through all the details. So we'll link up to that as well. If you have any questions or thoughts, you want to reach out, feedback@doug.show. That's how you can get in touch with me. Maybe you have questions or show ideas or something like that. So feel free to reach out. Without further ado, we'll send it to the Mile High Fi podcast with Cody and myself and Carl Jensen. And we have a fun time. Cody's a cool dude, and feel free to reach out to him on social media or other links that we put out there. All right. I think that's it for now. And we'll catch you on the next episode. This is the Mile High Fi podcast with Carl Jensen and Doug Cunnington. We have authentic conversations about the journey to FI, health, happiness, and some very odd tangents. We interview FI experts, side hustlers, people on their way to FI, and those who have reached the other side. Join us every week. And if you want the show notes and links and all that other stuff, head over to milehighfi.com.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Mile High Fi podcast. I'm Carl Jensen with my co-host.
I'm Doug Cunnington.
And we have a very special guest today. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Cody Berman. I am a jack of all trades, kind of a serial entrepreneur, always dabbling in different side hustles. Recently, over the past couple of years, have fallen in love with online courses, real estate, and we can talk about, actually recorded a video pretty recently of 19 different income streams currently.
Oh my God. And are you even 18 yet? Can you drink? Can you legally drink?
I can drink. I can drink. Got my coffee right here. So maybe not alcohol. 26, Carl, 26.
All right. Cool. And I hear you have a funny story about a recent conference in Las Vegas. Tell us what happened.
Yeah. So I went to this conference and it's like 108 degrees out. It's Vegas. And so I'm wearing shorts as any New Englander would. Like, I'm not used to that temperature. And we end up going out to like this bar, club, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I get up. Like, you can't get in with shorts on. I'm like, great. So I'm scouring around. It's probably like midnight or 1 a.m. at this point. And I'm like, okay, I got to get pants somewhere. Like, I'll literally just wear sweatpants. I'll go buy them at wherever, Walmart. And so the closest thing I could find was a Walgreens. Walking to Walgreens, I'm like, hey, do you guys have long pants? She's like, no, honey, we don't have long pants. This is Vegas. I'm like, okay. So I end up getting the longest shorts that they sell. Like, these are like real baggy, like gangster shorts. And they, but they still weren't long enough to kind of count as pants. So I end up, I'm still wearing my regular shorts. I sag these pants down to about upper knee level. So now the second pair of shorts is touching my ankles. Tuck them into my shoes. Walk up to the line. I'm way closer than I was before I got kicked out. And the guy's like, what the hell are you wearing? He's like, you can't get in with that. I'm like, dude, this is the new Yeezys. This is the new style, like the double shorts. Everyone's doing it. And I had a couple friends backing me up, and he's like, get the hell out of here. And then end up going back to the hotel. So,
Oh my God. How did you walk? Were you like a penguin or what? Like,
I was penguining hard. I tied them pretty tight. I was kind of like keeping my knees tight together.
He's like, get the hell out. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. And so you still have these giant shorts or what?
These giant Las Vegas shorts. And I brought them home. My fiance's like, what the hell are these? They say Las Vegas down the side of them.
Classy. Yeah. That is rough too. I mean, it's so hot. I couldn't imagine.
108 in long pants and a long shirt. Like, come on.
Yeah. It must have been a nice place.
It was, I mean, every place there just, they think they're hoity toity. You can't get in unless you have long pants on and college shirt. It's like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I don't think I've ever been to a place like that in my life. I'm kind of trashy, though.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And I think if they said, hey, you need to get pants, you're like, this is not the place for me.
No, I'm going back to the hotel.
And an Outburger's still open. Let's head out there.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Yeah, let's get into it. So I see the first question in here is, where did you go to university? And how'd it go?
So I went to UMass Amherst. Go UMass. And it's kind of like a party school, but I made the most of it. And a lot of people have asked me now as an entrepreneur, we can talk about this later. I quit my job 7 months in. And so people are like, was college worth it? Totally fair question. I went to school for finance and economics. And the answer for me is yes, but not for the reasons you might think. So people are like, you're in personal finance now. You must have used a ton of what you learned with your finance and economics degree. I probably used like 2% of what I learned.
Yeah.
What I did learn in college was how to network. Like how to talk to people, how to write professional emails, like the right things to say to get in front of the right people. And I learned how to learn. So I became a really good learner in college because in high school, I could kind of just like, you know, study for 20 minutes before the exam and do well. I was just kind of gifted in that way, I guess, in high school. But in college, like I couldn't do that. I actually had to start learning the material. So I learned how to learn quickly. I learned how to read more quickly. I learned how to like distill and process, you know, just a bunch of things and kind of get them into my head. And that's helped me tremendously now as an entrepreneur, like being able to just like catch a bunch of things, figure out a bunch of things on the fly, and then distill that down into like an action plan. So might not be the reasons you'd think, like this is college was worth it, but it was worth it for me in, you know, learning quickly and networking.
You said a phrase there that gave me some PTSD from my time in corporate America, and that was action plan. Sounds like some shit from that. What was that? The Office or Office Space. That's it. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking of. Yes. Sounds like some shit from that. Did you work in corporate America?
For 7 months.
Seven months?
I was in commercial real estate lending, and then I was grinding out entrepreneurship on the side. Finally made the jump when my side hustle income started to cover my expenses, which were $1,200 a month at that point, living super frugal.
Yeah.
And since then, I've just been, you know, going full entrepreneur.
And so 7 months, pretty short time. Did you learn anything? Did you get anything out of it? Or was it just kind of like a confirmation that you didn't want to do it?
So here's another funny story. When I quit my job, I was telling my boss, and I even told him what I was doing. I'm like, hey, I'm going for entrepreneurship. And he's like, you were a waste of time and resources. He said that to me. And I'm like, damn. But what the day job allowed me to do was build up this like kind of security nest egg. So I was able to save like 50K in 7 months. I got a pretty good signing bonus. I think it was like 10 or 15 grand. And then I was making like 4 to 5 grand a month. I had overtime too. And I was pocketing most of that. I was saving like 90% of my income. So by the time I quit, I had like 50 grand saved up, and I was spending like between $1,000 and $1,200 a month. And I was like, okay, now I have like, you know, 35 to 50 months of entrepreneurial freedom because of. So what the day job gave me was flexibility, mm-hmm. although I didn't take away too many like hard skills from it.
Sure.
Maybe networking and maybe collaborating a little bit, but not too much. I mean,
yeah, you were already,
I was already doing that.
Yeah.
But gotcha. Yeah, having the 50K on the side just to give me entrepreneurial freedom was kind of huge.
And then I think we'll get in, I may be jumping ahead, but you saved, you know, ton of money. Like, that is kind of rare, especially like you got a signing bonus, you didn't go buy a new car, blow money or whatever. Maybe you did, but yeah, why are you like that?
My parents were really good about teaching me to save growing up. So I kind of stumbled into this whole financial independence thing by myself, like the investing side of things, retiring early. But they were like, you should always save money. Like whatever you come in, whatever comes in, whatever you earn, you should always put some aside for like future expenses. And it was kind of just like that. And so it always stuck with me. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to save as much of my paycheck as I possibly can.
Sure.
Like growing up, they forced me to, sounds like, you know, they were so tough. They encouraged me to pay for my own things. If I wanted a video game, I'd have to save up the $50 from working odd jobs and side hustling. So I feel like just going through my teen years and into college and, you know, then eventually into early adulthood, like having my first real job, I just had that savings mentality. So
yeah,
it, as the checks got bigger, the savings rate stayed the same.
So yeah, I've got kind of a follow-up to that. Your parents taught you to save. Were they entrepreneurs? Where did that bug come from?
So both my parents worked traditional jobs. My mom is kind of, I wouldn't say an entrepreneur, but she does odd jobs. She was a massage therapist by trade, but she'd always just like pick up random stuff. My dad worked in marketing. So I guess I maybe got some of my marketing brain from him, but both of them were kind of just standard corporate America jobs.
Okay, so where did you get the idea to start your first business or hustle?
Tim Ferriss, 4-Hour Workweek. Yeah. I read it when I was 19, sophomore in college, and he talked about separating your time from your money. So basically leveraging your time into like scalable things, things that once you kind of put the effort in, once you build that business, once you build that course, once you create that ebook or that book, then you can like kind of sell it in perpetuity. And mm-hmm. I think he called them muses in the 4-Hour Workweek, and I became obsessed. And so shortly after that, I started my first company, which was a disc golf manufacturing company. And that company just gave me so many different learning lessons. It's honestly something I don't spend any time on today. And it's kind of just like still pittering away in the background. Sure. It doesn't really make me much money. But the lessons that I learned from starting that business, I'm going to give a shout out to my boy T. Ferriss, were like just so life-changing.
Very cool. And then when you read the 4-Hour Workweek, were you super excited and you're like, I have to tell a bunch of people about it?
Oh, yeah. I was telling all my friends and they didn't want to hear any of it. Yeah. Like no 19-year-old wants to like map out their life. They're just partying in college. And I was partying too. Like I don't want people to think that I'm some superhuman who's just like always business, always grinding. Like I was still partying like way more than I probably should have in college. Yeah. But I was spending my spare time instead of watching Netflix. I was like trying to build these businesses.
That's very cool.
So now I'm kind of curious. I really want to get inside your head. Why do you think that book, like what spoke to you? Was it the potential to make money, the freedom? Like you read that book and it sunk in and you said, I'm going to go for this. Can you expound on why or your thought process?
Yeah, I think growing up, I thought rich was just the only rich people I had in my life were my cousin was like a lawyer. I had some other people who were like doctors in my family. And that was like rich people to me. And both those professions, nothing wrong with them, but they're both trading your time for money. Like my cousin is a lawyer, worked his ass off, 100-hour weeks, like he's making a shit ton of money. But all of my role models were trading their time for money. I think what really drew me to Tim Ferriss when he was talking about was like all this time leveraged money, like kind of the passive income, the business building, the notion that I could spend my time building this thing up and then kind of just like let it sit, let it ride, and then it would make me money in perpetuity. It was almost like a quicker way to financial independence.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, you mentioned it a couple of times, but just having the time freedom, which he really highlights. And did you read the book Vagabonding too by Rolf Potts?
I have not, no.
Okay. And I think Rolf was on Tim Ferriss's podcast a couple of times in the first, say, 50 episodes. Check those out. I think Tim Ferriss said that he carried around Vagabonding like in his travels when he was coming up with the idea of the 4-Hour Workweek or something like that. But good book, same idea.
Yeah, I think Tim Ferriss said that's the most influential thing he has ever read. I hope I'm doing that justice. He did like a huge double podcast with that guy.
Very cool. All right, so let's get into some of the passive income sources, business and investing. We have kind of a bullet point list. How do you want to hit this, Carl?
Yeah, let's start with passive income and digital products. What do you do around that space, Cody?
So I first got introduced, actually, I have a business partner, Julie, in Gold City Ventures, which is like the brand I have here. She introduced me to selling digital products and printables on Etsy. And basically what that is like calendars, planners, invitations, templates, like if you guys were looking for like a social media template or a podcast media kit, for example, you could go on Etsy and go buy one from someone. who's created that product, listed it there, and then like thousands of people can buy from them. So it's passive income, like these digital products. You're not shipping them. You're not holding inventory. You just kind of create it, list it, and then you sell it. So I started to see some early success selling on Etsy, and then eventually Shopify, and then eventually some other platforms. And then I ended up, you know, creating a course on it. And, you know, all of these things, like I said, it's like, it's the one to many model. You create the thing once and then a bunch of people can purchase it from you. And it's just been transformative. I've spent a lot of my time now, whereas back in like 2019, when I quit my corporate job, I was spending my time doing freelance stuff. I was freelance writing. I was podcast editing, video editing, copywriting. Now I spend like all my time building things that can pay me even if I don't work on them actively. So that's kind of where digital products, like I just became enamored with them and I'm like, this is sick. Like I'm making all this money. Like I'm just spending a couple hours creating this thing, whether it's an ebook or a printable or a digital download or a course. And then I'm making daily sales or weekly sales from it, and it's passive income.
Yeah. Like how cool is it that we have the internet where billions of people can access your thing versus 50 years ago, if you wanted to be an entrepreneur, you'd have to open up a store or whatever. And your total addressable market is the people in your town or whatever. But now we can reach the world with anything.
I was just talking to someone about that yesterday. I'm like, even 10 years ago, I don't think what I'm doing now would be even remotely possible. Like I can literally go and work from anywhere in the world, make the same amount of money, work the same amount of hours. Like I'm completely time independent. I can work whatever hours I want. Like even in 2012, I don't think that was possible.
Yeah.
Just like the systems, the scalability we have now is insane. It's like honestly the best time in history to make money, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And just with the, you know, the online course platforms, like they matured a ton in the last 5 years, but even whatever, 7 years ago, you'd have to maybe piece together a couple things and it would not be that great.
So much easier.
Yeah. Awesome. And then anything else on the digital product front? So there's a few income streams there, but anything else on your mind with it?
I just encourage people to like check it out. I honestly think so. I also invest in real estate, and we're going to talk about real estate today, but real estate, that first step is a big step. And for a lot of people who haven't experienced passive income, I honestly think digital products is probably one of the easiest ways to like dip your toes in the water and legitimately like make money while you sleep.
Yeah.
Just putting a product up on Etsy or Shopify or on a website or whatever, or even just creating an ebook on something, a 5-page ebook on something that you're knowledgeable about that people ask you about often.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier than like people make it out to be. And it's a lot easier than something like real estate in this example.
Sure.
Very
like low cost to entry, where it's real just estate.
Your time. Yeah. Exactly. Or real estate, like you could find a down payment, or it's just a lot more legwork and there's a lot more risk involved.
For sure. All right, let's get into real estate then.
Let's do it. Yeah.
So how many doors do you have and what kind of rentals are they?
So long term, short term, currently we have 11 long term rental doors and 2 short term rental like Airbnbs. And just recently starting into short term rentals, and it has been crazy, dude. Like I didn't realize we're in central Massachusetts. You never hear someone saying, oh yeah, you know what? I'm going to go on a vacation then. Central Massachusetts.
Yeah.
You would just wouldn't think of it as like a hub where people are booking Airbnbs. This past month, we have a place that's not even on a lake. It's across the street from a lake. We just did $5,000 in net profit after mortgage, after all expenses, after everything, cleaners. Wow. $5,000 in central Massachusetts. It's nuts. And like the return on a long-term rental would probably be like maybe $700-$800 in cash flow. So that is something I'm going to start exploring a lot more in the coming years, like just looking into the future. I do like the stability of long-term rentals, and obviously it's like less of a management headache and stuff like that. But man, short-term rentals are crazy.
Yeah. Well, I was just about to ask, you know, there's no free ride. So yeah, what are the downsides to the short-term?
It's just, I mean, there's more turn and burn. Like people are just in and out. Luckily, I have a partner in this kind of short-term rental business, and she owns a cleaning company. Which is huge.
Perfect.
Huge. So she already has a system. She already has 18 cleaners on her roster.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is just, you know, another client to her, basically. It's like, it's cool. Nothing. Where if it was me by myself, I'd have to go find cleaners on some website, maybe like Turnover B&B. Then I'd have to manage them, make sure the place is clean. But like, she kind of just handles all that for us, which is wicked cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious, a follow-up. Have you ever asked the tenants or the, not tenants, but the short-term renters, why are they coming? Who are the people who rent this in the middle of Massachusetts?
Yeah. So we have a guest book and we actually get a lot of people to fill it out. Like it's just a cute little guest book that's like sitting on the main living room table. people from Boston that just like want kind of a out of city retreat, people who are couples that just want something different for the weekend. Like we strategically bought a hot tub. It's only $4,000, but it honestly adds like $100 per night booking value. Wow. People are just sorting by like hot tub. They're like, oh, this place is a hot tub. Let's book it.
We do. Yeah. We like hot tubs. Yeah. So we usually.
So do we. Like when we travel, we're always looking like this place is a hot tub.
And yeah.
If it does, we're willing to pay a premium. And that's worked out in our favor.
And it was only, you say $4,000 for the hot tub?
Yeah. It was $4,000 for the hot tub. We got it from like Costco or that one was from Costco. Yeah.
Okay.
Wayfair sells them too.
Why did you have to I'm going deep. I'm checking for my wife here.
Yeah.
So did you have to get it rewired get it wired for 220 out to the hot tub or whatever?
We did have to get like a little panel outside. It's called the emergency shut off for the hot tub. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll talk later.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, man. That's a lot of money. That's a big differential. You said 700 or 800 versus like 5,000. Holy crap.
And it might be seasonal, like simply just closed on the place that I'm talking about right now that did $5,000 last month because we just kind of outfitted it and launched it in May. But I mean, even if a couple months out of the year, like we're making $5,000 in profit, it's well worth doing the short term rental.
Yeah, man. It's pissed for a lot of hot tubs.
Exactly, unlimited hot tubs.
Yeah, you could always pivot and do maybe a medium term rental, like a monthly thing in the cooler months or whatever, where it might be
traveling nurses.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're doing that with a property now, actually. But yeah, that's awesome. Do you have any real estate horror stories? Has anything bad ever happened to you in real estate?
So I think our first year in real estate, so we started investing in 2020 and I just had so many people on my podcast that had retired early with real estate. I'm like, why the hell don't I have any properties? So we just started like buying properties really quickly. And I think we got a little too trigger happy, cash flow trigger happy. We're like, this place cash flows, it's sick. Like we're going to make so much money with it. And it was just in kind of shittier areas with shittier quality tenants. And they were just annoying and they called out little maintenance issues and stuff like that. And so we ended up actually selling off two of the properties, 5 units. Luckily, we had like a crazy bull market. And so we actually made money selling them. But,
oh, wow.
You know, in retrospect, we shouldn't have bought them in the first place. It was just a mistake. Like it was a lot of wasted man hours, like going through like the inspections and just like setting all the processes and systems up. And like I said, I think I was just super trigger happy. I'm like, oh, I'm a real estate investor now. Like, this is going so well. This is awesome. And we were making money. It was just like the quality of the people in there weren't worth the headache. And now kind of the rule of thumb that me and my fiance use is if we wouldn't want to live in the property, we don't want that property as a rental. Okay. We want the quality of people that are like us, like people who are well-to-do folks that care about like the curb appeal, that care about the inside of the house, that aren't going to like destroy the place, never clean. So that's definitely a mistake that we made earlier on. And now it's something that we use that as a benchmark moving forward.
Yeah, that's not too bad of a mistake. And you know, like some person coming in with 50 cats or something like that.
Nothing like that. We have a pretty rigorous screening process, which is something that I learned from just like the people I talk to. They're like, make sure they have a good credit score. Make sure you do a background check. Make sure this, make sure that. Check their pay stubs. And we did all that. And it's knock on wood, no name wood around, but it's worked out.
Yeah. Very good. And I was going to ask something else about the rentals and everything, but I can't remember. So
we're going to ask if – I know I mentioned we self-manage.
Okay.
The reason for that is we have set up such good teams that, like, not even kidding, probably spend 4 to 5 hours a month on management total. So like, if we get a call and someone's like, oh, like, why do you want to be a landlord? Do you really want to go out and fix a toilet in the middle of the night? It's like, well, I'm not going to fix a toilet. First of all, like, I probably don't know how to fix the toilet.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of far, like, these rentals are like, most of the ones are in Connecticut. I'm in Massachusetts. They're like an hour away. I'm not going there in the middle of the night. So we just have like a plumber on call, electrician on call, a handyman on call, HVAC people on call. Like we've kind of built out the systems so that if we do have an issue, I just like send a text or a quick call and it's taken care of.
Got it.
So I feel like for those who are like scared, one, they don't want to hire a property manager because they're like, I don't want to give away that extra cash flow. You can totally self-manage if you don't have like a crazy huge portfolio, if you have the right systems and right team in place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously it takes a bit to build out. Like at the beginning, we were scrambling. We like had to find an electrician, find a reliable plumber, find all these people. But now it's just like a text. They go take care of it. They send me an invoice and that's it. It's 10 minutes of my time.
Got it.
Yeah, so I see a theme here. This is kind of similar to the digital products in that you set everything up once and then it's kind of hands off. It just goes off and does its own thing. You've got with the digital products, there's not much you have to do at all. With this, you've got the system, so set it and forget it.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a theme of today's episode. Like I have just become obsessed with systems and processes and then eventually outsourcing. and kind of scaling myself out, and then, you know, taking the margin off of whatever I can pay other people to handle those systems or processes. It's been really lucrative, and it saves me a lot of time.
Yeah. Awesome. And you said, if I caught it right, you started in 2020. So you're only like 2.5 years into real estate investing.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You definitely hit the ground running. You're an action taker, it sounds like. So
I'm an action taker.
what goals do you have overall, like real estate? Or do you want to acquire a bunch more, or are you at a good spot right now?
I mean, I just take opportunities in stride. Like I said before, 19 different income streams at this time.
Yeah.
And so if a new opportunity presents itself, like actually, I didn't even talk about this yet. And Carl's my lender on this flip that I'm doing. It's a really interesting situation. No one wanted to touch this flip. The neighbor's a bitch. Yeah. She's super annoying. And it's like the leach field is like potentially going into her property line or whatever. And so I just met with her. I'm like, hey, like, we'll have it surveyed. We'll have them put the camera in the leach field, find out where the property line ends. Like, if it is on your property, like, we'll just find a price and I'll pay you off for an easement. She's like, oh, okay, that works. Yeah. Why didn't anyone else do this? We got the place for 200 grand and it's going to need like probably 60K of work. The comps in the area are between 400 and 500K. Oh, wow. Just because we got creative, we actually met with this neighbor lady who is a bitch. It sucked, like whatever. But we got it worked out, and now it's going to be, you know, once it's all said and done, a super lucrative deal because we got a little bit creative. So I feel like, to answer your question, it's a very roundabout way of answering your question. I don't have any end goals. Like, I'm not like, I want 500 doors or like, I want, you know, 50 Airbnbs. I'm just like, if I see a good deal come up where I can make money, I'm going to take it.
Sure.
I'm going to figure out a way to make it happen. And that's in real estate or anything else. Like, if someone comes to me with some new opportunity, some new thing, and I vet it and see it as a viable source of passive income or business I can build, I'm like, hell yeah, I'm all in. I'll give it a whirl.
Cool.
That's awesome.
And yeah, other investments that you have?
Like, just in general?
Yeah. Do you have anything conventional, like an index fund?
Yeah. Okay. So in terms of investments, so I do real estate, and I mentioned like long-term, short-term flip. I do have index funds, so I keep a decent bit. I think like probably 40% of my net worth is just in the stock market in the form of index funds. Also been doing some syndications over the past year. So just kind of pooling my funds for bigger and better like apartment complexes, have some money in a self-storage facility. I actually did my first like angel investing this past year as well into a financial app called Topia. Our good friend Grant Sabatier is a co-founder in that.
Okay. Cool.
So I'm like an angel investor. Have some money in crypto, a pretty conservative amount, like probably 5% of my net worth just in Bitcoin and Ethereum. Some individual stocks, nothing really, don't really dabble too much. Honestly, like I said, like 90% of my net worth in the stock market is in the form of index funds. And I used to be like a day trader. I went to school for finance and economics. So everyone's like day trading, like, you know, spending so much time reading 10K reports and earnings reports, and just not for me. Like the alpha that you can get from doing that, sometimes you can get lucky, but it's like maybe you can eke out a percent or two, but at what cost? It's like, do you really want to be reading earnings reports all day and like thinking you could outsmart Wall Street? No. It's easier to just set it and forget it in an index fund.
Right on.
In my opinion.
So you have these 19 income streams. You got into real estate. You have the disc golf company. You're all over the place, man. So do you ever feel like, number one, is it a little overwhelming because you have a lot of plates spinning? And do you think if you focused on one of the areas, you would have gone or you could go farther if you just focus on whatever digital products and you just hammer on that? So two-part question. Yeah. You could hit it however you want.
Okay. So the first one, I definitely feel overwhelmed sometimes. And it's just like, it'll be a random day. It'll be like, I'll get a call that like screws things up, whether it's like in purchasing a property, or maybe there's some issue with a property at the same time, like some technical things going wrong with the online course at the same time, like, you know, Etsy is giving me some warning because they think like it's a copied product, you know, name 100 different things that could go wrong. If like 7 things are going wrong in one day, I'm a human. I get overwhelmed. Yeah. I'm like, shit. But then I, you know, action plan. I create like a little checklist. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to tackle these one thing at a time. Like, this is something that I can handle. Like, it's not going to be the end of the world. You know, it's not like my house is burning down and all my family is dying. Like, this is, these are all manageable things. Like, this is a big time first world problems.
Yeah.
So I try to just like level with myself in my head. I'm like, okay, Cody, like, just take a breath. We can figure this out. On the second front of like, if I just hammered one thing, I think in terms of money, yes. If I just focus on one thing, like digital products, for example, I could probably make more money overall. But I think from a personal satisfaction, I would get real bored real quick.
Yeah.
I just like trying different things. And I think the fact that a lot of these things, going back to the Tim Ferriss and like the building one thing and then just kind of setting it and now it's making me money, building another thing, setting it, now it's making me money. That's what most of my income streams are at this point. They're not like, it's not like I'm doing, like I said before, I'm not doing freelance writing, podcast editing, video editing, copywriting, email marketing. And I'm not like doing all that stuff with my hours. And those aren't my income streams. It's like, I sell digital products on Etsy. Then I sell like templates on Shopify. Then I do like long-term rentals, short-term rentals, flips. But a lot of these things are already businesses that I've kind of scaled and outsourced and created processes for. So it doesn't take too much of my time to manage the things I've already created. Most of my time, honestly, I know we're probably going to, I looked at the questions ahead of time, talk about like what my day is like. Most of the time I'm spending time on new projects. So like I usually try to set and forget all the things I have going on. And then I just like set my sights on a new goal and spend all of my time just building that thing out until that becomes a scaled out outsourced business.
Totally. That makes sense. Yeah. And you're excited and you're pumped. Wake up, you're like, I want to learn this new thing or whatever.
And if you have that energy about something, like it makes sense to go all in. Like,
yeah,
you get burnt out. Well, I get burnt out anyway, like working on the same thing over and over. If I were to do the same thing, that's why I quit corporate America. It was like the same thing every freaking day. And I didn't even know why I was doing it.
Yeah.
And so like, if I get passionate about something, I'm like, I just want to like hammer this for a month because I'm like jazzed up. Maybe I heard a podcast about it, or maybe like I was talking to a friend at FinCon and they're like, dude, you got to try this out. And so I just like, Give it my all for a month. If it works out, works out. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right.
Cool. On our outline here, you want to talk about keeping fixed expenses low. What do you mean by that?
So I admittedly have spent way more this past year than I've spent in prior years. But all of those expenses could go away tomorrow. And so what I mean by fixed expenses low is like the big ones, the housing, the transportation, the food. The ones that you kind of have to pay every month. Like you're not going to go homeless. If you need a car, you can't really just get rid of your car. You need to eat. But a lot of people will just like screw themselves until they'll get a super expensive house, or they'll rent a super expensive apartment, or they'll get like $1,000 a month car payment. And all of a sudden your base expenses are $3,000 a month. Like going back to when I quit my corporate job, if my base expenses, if I was just like, yo, I got the signing bonus. Like, yeah. I'm making a bunch of money. I'm going to get this nice apartment in Boston. It's $2,500 a month. I'm going to get this sick car. That's $1,000 a month car payment. And then I'm going to start like eating out a bunch and getting expensive groceries. All of a sudden, I'm looking at like $4,000 a month minimum. And that's without like going on vacations or going to concerts and like all the variable expenses. If my base was $4,000 a month, I could have never went full entrepreneur. I just wouldn't have had the optionality. So I think a lot of people screw themselves in terms of the options they have by keeping their fixed expenses so high, like the housing, the transportation, the food. So if you can get those low, do, you know, house hack, get it, have a paid off car, be intentional about like your groceries and going out to eat and stuff. And then if you have a year or months that you're doing really well, whether it's an entrepreneurship or you're hitting bonuses in your job, then you can spend that on the variable stuff. You can go on vacations, you can go to concerts, you can go out to eat more often. But if your base expenses are already really high, then you just don't have flexibility. If you have a shitty month in terms of earnings, there's nowhere to turn. And like, then you could all of a sudden find yourself living paycheck to paycheck. And I think that's why, honestly, a lot of Americans or just people in general get stuck.
Yeah. And then just to confirm, so you spent a lot more this year is what you so it was on the variable kind of stuff, vacation, food, you treating yourself.
Yeah. Like whatever. In 2022, we've already taken 14 flights. We've been traveling like literally probably 75 calendar days out of the year. And we're recording this in September.
Yeah.
So yeah, probably close to 3 months, 2.5 months out of the year, we've been traveling. We've been eating out, going out a bunch more, going to a ton of concerts, going to a bunch of events just because it's been a really lucrative year for me. But like, if you know all of my businesses failed tomorrow, our base expenses are like $1,400 a month. Yeah. So if I had to just cut everything and go back to living like I did straight out of college, like when I quit my job, I could, which gives me a lot of flexibility and just makes me sleep at night.
Yeah. Well, and on that note, do you value income or saving more?
That's a tough question. I'm probably going to say income because it's infinitely scalable.
Yeah.
Because you can only frugal yourself to zero. You can income yourself to whatever the hell you're willing to grind to. So like if I were to just keep my corporate job and like save as much as I could, I would be light years behind where I am now if I became the entrepreneur that I am today. And that's why I don't think there's anything wrong with a day job. And people are like, can you get rich from a day job? And I'm like, well, you got to define rich, because the richest people in the world don't have day jobs. They're entrepreneurs. They're business owners. Because like, let's say you work at Tesla, for example, and Tesla doubles its revenue and you're just like a regular employee, there's no way they're giving you 100% raise. Like, no right. fucking chance they're giving you 100% yeah. raise. But if you're a business owner and you double your revenue, you probably just doubled your income for the year. And yeah. so that's the difference between being an entrepreneur and someone who works in a day job, is like your income is infinitely scalable and it's a direct result of how well your business is doing.
Yeah. yeah. There's no cheating in that.
Yeah. yeah.
Very, very interesting. Cool.
Yeah. Is there anything we missed that you want to talk to before we move on to our next topic, or on business investing? Any?
Maybe just going back to the processes thing, because I've been saying that a bunch, but I haven't really given people like a mm-hmm. tactical thing. For those who are like business building entrepreneurs, I think just like start to write down or even create videos of like how you do stuff. Like, let's use like a podcast, for example. If you want to at some point like outsource the podcast, like just take a video of you editing. Like, this is how I want it edited. This is exactly what I need to do. Have like a really detailed guide on how you want your show notes. Have a really detailed guide on this is how you pitch to sponsors. And then if you already create what I call, they're called SOPs, standard operating procedures. If you just spend the time creating those now, and again, it's not like you don't have to learn anything. It's just showing people your future hires exactly how you do things. And then it's so much easier to hire out. And that was a mistake I made early on. It's like, I'm like, I'm the only one who knows how to do this my way. I'm not going to outsource this. And then as I started to like think about it, I'm like, okay, well, if I can outsource these 7 hours that I spend every week like editing, now I can get 7 hours of my time back. And all it's going to take is me creating one video or like one detailed process guideline, handing it off to somebody else, maybe, you know, tweaking and refining their work a little bit. But once they get it down, now you have like a podcast editor forever.
Right.
So I think a lot of people, like that's the tactical way I would tell people to do it, is like just literally document your systems and processes, how you do shit right now. And now you have a template that you can just give someone that you're hiring in the future.
Yeah. I love that.
That's huge.
Yeah. And I come from a project management background. So I did a lot of onboarding and operations kind of stuff. So yeah, that was kind of the stuff that I did for the day job. But yeah, as an entrepreneur, one thing that I ended up doing was just, you know, you have to understand the process yourself. So if you try to outsource too early, then you may run into some issues. So I figured out how to do it the best way myself, then document it. And the one thing I'll add is I usually write out a job aid versus a video, since sometimes a button will move or something will change. So screenshots were a little bit easier. But I would tell anyone I hired to leave comments, anything that was confusing. So it was like a living, iterative, constantly improving document. So as I hired more people, it got better and better. Fewer questions came in, and then like anyone could come in and follow that job aid.
Yeah.
So
it's huge.
Yeah.
And it sounds like so corporate-y and it sucks. I was like, I don't want to create like an SOP. Like, I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's seriously, if you do want to at some point scale yourself out of your businesses, you kind of do need stuff like that.
Yeah. At least you don't have a mission statement, do you? Or do you have one?
I don't have a mission statement, no.
Okay. We should come up with one. We need one for Mile High Fi.
I've got one. It's tattooed, but it's in a place I couldn't show without us getting kicked off YouTube.
I also have a tattoo in a place that I can't show without getting kicked off YouTube. Mine says Chum Bucket.
We'll put that on the OnlyFans site.
I don't know if that's real or not, but we're recording in my hotel room, so I think we may be able to find out. All right. So that was an awkward transition into FIRE.
Perfect. All right.
So where did you learn about financial independence and FIRE?
Actually, my mom, I think, was the one who sent me a Mr. Money Mustache article. And this is shortly after the Tim Ferriss phase when I was 19. I think it was also I was 19 when I discovered Mr. Money Mustache. He was kind of my, I guess, liaison into the whole FIRE movement. Then I started listening to podcasts, reading books, and kind of just became obsessed with the idea of early retirement and financial independence. I honestly thought it was absolute bullshit when I first stumbled upon it. I'm like, people don't retire at 30. Like, I didn't know anyone in my life. Like I said, my rich role models were like the doctor and the lawyers, my family. Like, they weren't retired. They were making a lot of money, but there was no retirement in their future. And then I actually went to an event in early 2018 called Camp FI, Camp Financial Independence. And I met these people in real life. And it's like, a dude is like 31. He's like, yeah, I'm just traveling. I'm like, oh, so these people are real. Like, this is a real thing. And then I just became obsessed with the notion of having work become optional. I don't think I'll ever actually retire. I just have like too much drive at this point.
Right.
But work is completely optional. Like, I could just take a couple weeks off and not do anything and I'd be fine, which is crazy. And if I didn't stumble into this movement, I see a lot of people who are in like the make a shit ton of money space. They're also in the spend a shit ton of money space, and they don't really understand the personal finance side of the equation. So they're just like really good at like selling a product or a service or whatever. But I think me being someone who discovered Tim Ferriss, so I'm like, on the make money front and kind of getting into the FIRE movement, it kind of gave me like akimbo, like two weapons at once, yeah. where now I can be like a responsible entrepreneur who can make a bunch of money, but also like understand the fixed expenses thing. Like I'm not going out and buying a $2 million mansion and a Bugatti just because I'm making good money.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. And I really identify with what you said. And I had a friend who was making like great money, but then they bought a big house, couple yeah. big cars, and then it went away and
they're stuck with it.
Yeah. So they had to downsize greatly and they were in a bad spot for a couple of years, but yeah, they just didn't, they were like, we're rich. And they just yeah. kept spending. It was nuts.
Yeah.
They need FIRE.
Yeah. Cody, I just want to expound on that. I think that's such a great point. Cause if you have either of those skills separately, they're powerful. If you're super frugal, no money, or if you're a great entrepreneur, very powerful, you can go far, but those are complementary. So if you've got both those down, you can just dominate, which is what yeah. you're doing clearly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I just kind of looked at people in the space like, okay, who is like retiring a crazy amount of time? And it was people like Grant Sabatier, who I talked about earlier, who I went on the book tour with. I'm like, this dude's like frugal and he's making like over $1 million a year. Like,
yeah.
Like that's the recipe to retire like super fast. And like you said, you can do it both ways. Like you could make a ton of money and save like, you know, 10% or 20% of that ton of money and then eventually retire. Or you could make okay money and save like a decent amount of that money. And those two people would probably end up with like the same amount of money in 20 years. But if you can combine the two, it's like, holy shit, like I can retire really fast and make a ton of money.
Yeah. And we didn't mention it, but I think people know you have a podcast called The FI Show. And if I remember right, you either shared your net worth or income. Can you, as much as you're comfortable sharing what you earn or anything like that?
Yeah. So I mean, I do share all my numbers just to like inspire people. And it's weird, honestly. I feel like yeah. weird saying stuff like that. So I'll just tell you like how the numbers have progressed over the last couple of years. It's literally nuts. So 2019, when I quit and started like doing a bunch of different entrepreneurial stuff, I made about 100K. 2020, I started just getting more involved with digital products, started investing in real estate, made about 200K. Last year, made 400K. This year, I'm on pace to hit a million.
Wow.
So you're doubling 100, 200, 400 to a million.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's literally nuts. Like I can't yeah. even, if I were to talk to myself like 4 years ago when I quit and told him where I was at today, like it's nuts. But it kind of going back to like the Tesla example, because my businesses have grown and I'm not an employee, like I'm not getting the, here's a 10% raise, buddy. Like yeah, great right. job. Like I'm able to kind of keep all of those gains. So yeah, I mean, it's been yeah. nuts.
Congrats. Yeah. And you are 26 is what 26.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. And net worth, it's been up and down because the stock market's been crazy, sure. but just about 2 million now.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. And the other thing we have going for us, if we're an entrepreneur, you've got access to things like a solo 401k, which allow you to do things, not exotic, but put much more money away quickly in a tax sheltered account. Like I didn't know that. I wasn't saving much at all in my 401k. And then I became a solo entrepreneur and like, I can put like 53,000 in yeah. this or whatever the limit was. Like, yeah. holy crap.
And do creative stuff with it. Like I know you're lending out of your solo 401k. You yeah. can buy properties in a solo 401k. You can invest in businesses in a solo. Yeah. There's a lot of options.
yeah. It's so good. Like, yeah, all that money, all that nice interest you're sending me. Poof. yeah. I don't have to pay any income tax. Yeah. Exactly. I will have to at some point when I take it out. Yeah. So would you consider yourself to be financially independent now? Or
yeah, no? Yeah. I mean, via the nest egg method,
yeah.
and via the like kind of just cash flow method as well, like money coming in from yeah. real estate and digital products and all that stuff.
Cool. Yeah, I was going to say I don't even need a spreadsheet to tell you that. Yeah, I think you hit FI.
and for context, I've got about almost five million, but I was negative net worth at the age of 26. So imagine what Cody's going to be when he's my age.
Yeah, I didn't know shit about shit. And when I was 26, I was buying a whole life plan at that point. So.
I got lucky that I was introduced early.
Yeah, yeah.
Like 19. I mean,
yeah.
It's seven years is kind of a long time, but it's just like I got right. introduced so early on.
Yeah.
It gave me such a leg up on people who.
Yeah.
And it's not like people can't catch up later on. It's just like sure. now I have so much more time for the money to compound, like you said.
Yeah. And so much freedom. Yeah. Yeah. And don't sell yourself short. I mean, yeah, it was great that you learned, but you're busting your ass and working hard
definitely
and working smart.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So it doesn't,
yeah,
it's not escaped us. I don't know if that's the right phrase, but yeah, exactly. You're doing good.
Yeah. I want to inspire people. That's why yeah. like you asked like, well, how much are you comfortable sharing? But like, yeah. and it feels weird. And I get like weird looks from friends and family and they make snarky comments sometimes, but I think on the whole, it's a net positive. People like see my income growth. I'm like, listen, like You were friends with me 4 years ago in 2018 when I was like just became an entrepreneur. I was making like $1,500 a month when I quit my corporate job. And now I'm making like way more per month. Yeah. But like you knew me the whole time. It's not like I'm doing like some fancy thing. Like I document my whole journey. I've had a podcast the entire time during my financial independence journey. So hopefully I'm just inspiring the youth out there.
Right on. And what does the FIRE community get right and wrong?
I think the FIRE community doesn't focus enough on the income front and the entrepreneurship thing and like the people who are really good at making a bunch of money. They focus a ton on the savings, which is totally cool. I think that's honestly, it's easier to start to expand the gap between your income and your expenses if you start with the saving front. It's hard. I know people are time crunched. People have other stuff going on. Like it's hard to be like, yeah, go get a side hustle and start making an extra $1,000 per month. Like that's a tough sell. But if you're like, hey, be a little bit more intentional about where you're spending, it's easier to cut that stuff out once you're like kind of in this world and conscious of how your money is working. But I don't think the FIRE community has enough emphasis on the income front, because it seriously is from entrepreneurial standpoint anyway. Your income is pretty much unlimited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. Anything else about FIRE you'd like to mention, Cody?
I think a lot of people also hate on the retire early part. And because people just hate that word retire. It's like, you know, people have been like headlines, like Business Insider is like 25-year-old retired. It's like, well, I'm not retired. I could retire if I wanted to, but I'm not. And I think most people in the space who get to that point get there because they work their ass off. They're not someone who just like hits the off switch once they hit that goal, that financial goal. So a lot of people are like, yeah, like, fuck the financial independence, like FIRE movement. Like you guys aren't actually retired. It's like, well, we have the option to, if we want, like we have enough passive income. It's just like most people that get to that point are wired to not shut off ever and just like keep pursuing different things and keep trying different stuff. So that's just probably not right for your audience, because everyone listening to this is like, hell yeah, FIRE. But for the mainstreamers, like the RE part of FIRE catches a lot of hate.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I mean, it's just focusing on the wrong part. Like, I think once people get a little deeper, like, and they're into it, they sort of understand. But yeah, it's an easy contrarian position to take where you're like, this is kind of bullshit or whatever. But
yeah, I heard J.L. Collins asked about this. Someone asked him about the whole work thing a couple of years ago. And he was like, work is close to the heart of the human soul or something like that. And I think that's absolutely true. Whatever you define as work, we have to have purpose, and work gives us that, but we definitely redefine work, and we define it how we want to define it. We don't let other people define it, which is the key. I mean, that's everything, I think.
Yeah.
I think a key shift for me was kind of adopting a growth mindset, and how I define a growth mindset is you're enjoying the process. Like, I am not someone who just like gets to the goal and like cheers. I honestly am like, oh shit, like I hit the goal. All right, whatever. On to the next thing. Like I said before, I'm like on to the next business. I just enjoy the hunt. Like I have kind of become obsessed with just getting better, whether that's in fitness and business and relationships, just in anything, or like just knowledge. I have started to just like become obsessed with getting better. And I think that's honestly the monetary stuff, like all these benefits are just like side benefits of falling in love with the journey. So if you can like retrain your mind to have a growth mindset and fall in love with the journey rather than just like waiting till you get to some goal. Like I think a lot of people actually get financial independence wrong in that way. But like once I hit my FI number, then it's like, no, build your life that you want before you hit your FI number or while you're going toward that FI number. Because if you're just like expecting life to be awesome once you hit your FI number, you're going to be in for a rude awakening.
Yeah,
that is so true. I know firsthand. Like, life is gonna be great when I hit this number. And then you hit it. It's like, it's like the dog who caught the car. Like, okay, what's next? Yeah. I need to rewind and enjoy do this shit over again.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and you mentioned fitness in there, so we do want to ask about your exercise routine.
Yeah. So every morning, the first thing I do, typically, that's not true. The first thing I do, I have a bunch of overseas VAs. And honestly, the first thing I do is like check in with what they did while I was sleeping, which goes back to the outsourcing thing. They're literally doing stuff while I'm sleeping. Then we go to the gym every single morning, usually 6 days a week. Me and my fiance Lauren get to the gym. We're usually there for like an hour and a half. I kind of do like working different body parts each day. So it's not like we just do the same routine. You know, we'll do like chest tries, back buys, legs, shoulders, core, circuit, all that stuff. And then honestly, usually most days we get in a second workout later on. So fitness is health is wealth, in my opinion. Like I would never want to trade places with like Warren Buffett, for example, or even someone who's just like out of shape and they're, you know, they're older. Just because I think there's no point of having a lot of money if you don't have your health. Like this, you're not gonna be able to enjoy it. Right. And a lot of people are trying to accumulate wealth for experiences, spend more time with family, go on vacations, whatever. It's like, if you're not taking care of your body, that stuff's either going to be way less enjoyable or you're not going to be able to do it at all.
Yeah.
So I think that's huge. So yeah, we usually work out 2 times a day. And then usually in the middle of the day, we do something like, not like a workout, but something active. We'll go on a walk or we'll kayak or we'll play tennis or whatever. So we usually have like 3 like active things during the day.
Cool.
This could change if we're on vacation and stuff. And we usually are more active actually on vacation, just like exploring, walking around. But yeah, man, I don't know. That's a very long-winded answer, but fitness is huge. Is huge for both of us. We actually recently did this thing where we both independently wrote down like the 10 most important things to us without like looking, and fitness was in the top 3 for both of us.
Yeah.
Like that is just like above everything. Money was like closer to the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Top 10 list, but
you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
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 That's cool. Yeah. And Carl's been running a lot lately. How's the running going?
It's going pretty good, except I stepped on a bunch of, I created this thing to organize all my sockets. Yeah. I put a bunch of screws through a piece of wood, and then the sockets could just hang on that. And I had it on the floor, and then I was walking around at night. I stepped on it, gave myself a bunch of puncture wounds, so I had to take a short rest from my running. But November 5th is the next Shoes and Brews 5K, so I have my thing, 2 months. I'm going to be under 30 minutes. That's my
goal. Awesome. Yeah. You can do it, man.
Yeah. I saw you with that the pull-up picture.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, I think you got to be transparent if you kind of, you got to show shit if you're going to tell. I hate when people say, oh, I'm going to do this, and this, and then they don't share out any of the details. Or they say they did it, but okay, well, let's see the proof. Exactly. I want to see it.
And actually, I forgot. Our mutual friend, David Boyer.
Yeah.
He's into pull-ups.
Yeah.
And he and I had a little pull-up contest, and he actually squeezed one more out than me. I did 18, and he went after, and then he did 19. But recently, I did 22. But he said that he texted you, and you were like, "Oh yeah." So how many pull-ups? How many pull-ups can you do? What's your max that you did?
For that video, I did 28. I think the max I've ever got was 32.
32.
But he's like, yo, I just got 22 pull-ups. I'm like, all right, David. I'm like, check this out. I sent him, I literally just mounted my phone, took a video. I did 28. I'm like, keep working.
Man. Health as well. Yeah. It's fun. My elbows get a little sore. I get a little tendonitis. I'm a couple years older than you. That's my excuse anyway.
Yeah, 2 or 3 years older.
Actually, I'm 57.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I moisturize. Yeah. So that's all. All right. So anything else on exercise? Can you think of, Carl?
No, I think that's it.
All right. So what does your perfect day look like?
It's pretty close to what we have now, quite honestly. Like I actually, you know, some people are like, oh, it's probably going to involve no work. I actually like working for like 3 to 4, maybe 5 hours a day, because I get into projects and I'm like excited about working on them. It's kind of the awesome part about financial independence is like I can actually just work on the things that excite me and then drop things that don't excite me. So yeah, probably go to the gym in the morning, work. I'll say work for a couple hours. I kind of usually get my best work done in the morning, like after the gym, like my mind stimulated. I'm like ready to go. And then make lunch around like noon. I do intermittent fasting actually on the health front. So I don't never eat breakfast. Then probably do something active for a couple hours, maybe hop back on if I'm feeling inspired.
Yeah.
Later on, like that's why I said 3 to 5, maybe 2 hours later on, like after we do whatever active thing, like whether it's like hiking or kayaking or whatever. And then, I usually at night we're either hanging out with friends or building businesses. Sometimes if we're lucky, we try to intentionally not watch too much TV. Yeah. So I guess the night thing kind of depends on what night of the week we're talking about, Doug, in terms of my ideal day. Like an ideal Tuesday is probably a little bit different than an ideal Friday for me.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, honestly, it's pretty close to what we have now. Like definitely can't complain. That sounds a little, first worldy, like nothing's wrong, but it's pretty close. We've been really intentional over the past couple months. Like we sit down every month and kind of just like map out. I'll literally ask Lauren, my fiance, I'm like, okay, like if you could improve our days, what would we do differently? And she's like, just recently, she's like, I wish we went on longer walks. So we've been going on longer walks. And so like, I think being really intentional about what your ideal day looks like and then trying to just build that into your lifestyle, like it might not be completely possible now if you slowly work at it and work at it, like you're going to get closer and closer to that dream day.
Very cool. Nice. And I have one more question I didn't prep you on, so it might not go anywhere. Nothing crazy, but aside from Mile High Five podcast, What other podcasts do you listen to? Any favorites? Are you a big podcast listener?
Yeah. So I actually don't listen to too many financial independence, personal finance podcasts. I feel like I've kind of just exhausted the things that I can learn. Although I do like listening to like cool stories and hearing how other people have done it. I listen to a lot of like kind of growth mindset-y type stuff. So I listen to Tim Ferriss's podcast. I'm still a huge fan of him. I listen to Sam Harris.
Okay.
He has Making Sense podcast. It's just like a kind of big ideas. It's like philosophy, that type of shit. I do listen to Online Marketing Made Easy with Amy Porterfield.
Okay.
And she talks about a lot about online courses. And that's where like I get a lot of ideas because we've been doing a bunch with courses over the past year.
Yeah.
Our mutual friend, Nick Loper, Side Hustle Nation, I actually like listening to tuning in sometimes to listen to how people are just making a bunch of money in weird ways.
Yeah.
What else do I got on my roster?
Do you listen to like Huberman Lab?
Yeah. I have. It's not like a regular for me. Okay. Why I didn't mention it.
Sure.
Honestly, yeah. I think that's pretty much my regular roster of like non-personal finance. And like if there is an episode, especially if I have like if I see friends on a podcast or someone like interesting, I just subscribe to a bunch and then I'll just kind of like pick and choose which ones I'm going to listen to.
Yeah. Cool. That sounds awesome for the podcast. Carl, can you think of any other questions?
I think we're good. We covered a lot of territory.
A ton.
What I will say, actually, this just jogged my memory because I recorded a video on this recently. I think it's a lot easier for people to absorb information than they make it out to be. Like people will always use the time excuse for everything. I don't have time to blink. I don't have time to do this, do that. And like, especially with podcasts, it's something that's so easy to bake into your day. Like you can listen to podcasts while you're cooking, you can even blast it on a speaker while you're in the shower. Like whatever the hell you have to do to get this information. And honestly, you've probably heard the Jim Rohn quote, like you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with.
Yep.
I consider my podcast people like people I spend time with. I'm listening to them like every single week and like just getting these kind of big ideas that I wouldn't get like just a normal conversation with the people I'm hanging around with at home. Not to fault them in any way, shape, or form, but we just don't have those types of conversations. So I think kind of intentionally building multitasking into your day and just using podcasts as an example is a great way to just like level up. And people use it for exercise too. They're like, I don't have time to exercise. It's like, do some squats while you're brushing your teeth. Like do some push-ups after you take a shit. Like just build it into your routine. Like you have a minute to spare. Yeah. You just tell yourself you don't have a minute to spare. Like all you need is like 10 minutes a day of, you know, somewhat rigorous working out to be like moderately healthy.
Yeah.
You can figure out a time to just do jumping jacks or pull-ups or push-ups or whatever. You can find those pockets. You just choose not to.
Yeah. You could do bodyweight squats while you're taking your shit. And that you're loosening your stuff up, it's probably healthy
clean
for your
the splash.
Yeah. That would be a problem. Yeah.
Carl, don't use this bathroom. Please just get your own room.
It's too late, Doug.
That's an odd way to finish, but I mean, you said it.
I guess I did say it, yeah. You know, you get what I'm saying,
though. Yeah. 100%.
People make excuses. People say I'm too busy. I don't have time. And the truth is you do have time. You just aren't prioritizing the things you say you're going to do.
Yeah.
I want to jump on that too. So yeah, it's prioritizing. But the thing is, like, you can't do everything. You have to give something up somewhere. And if someone was like, hey, I want to do 19 streams of income just like Cody, you can do it. You probably can't do all 19 at once. You have to build on top of it. Yeah. Like layer after layer. But yes, people, I feel like sometimes are like, oh yeah, I want to try to do everything, and you will have to give something up. Like there's always like a resource constraint.
And people do find the time when it's something that's a high enough priority for them. So like if someone's house burned down or they have a dying family member, you're gonna find the time to figure that shit out or spend time with that dying family member. Like you're gonna find the time to like, you know, sit next to that family member in the hospital for whatever number of hours you need to. But and you know, obviously this is a really grim example, but like that's usually what it takes for people to uproot their routine or like start to change something about their daily habits. It's some catastrophic event. But if you can like start intentionally just building these things out, like, you know, a couple minutes each day doing something positive, whether that's building a business or working out or language learning, like it's just, and it starts to compound and compound and compound. Huge fan of Atomic Habits by James Clear, actually, with that stuff, like just habit stacking.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I have one final question for you, Cody. For people watching on YouTube, that shirt either looks like it could be something really expensive or something you got for like 50 cents on the on the rack at the thrift store. It's a nice looking shirt. You look great in it, but I just don't know what
$15
what to think about. Okay.
Marshalls.
Okay, so kind of
Marshalls
in the middle.
Has some awesome shirts. Not good. You know, you should get Marshalls to sponsor this episode.
There's one right by my house. I go in there all the time. I usually just wear Mile High Five shirts. That's
fair enough.
Yeah. But it looks like a good shirt.
Yeah. It's like, I like the little floral pattern. It's cool. It's like, I'm fun, but somewhat formal in a collar.
it's business and fun all in one. Kind of like the mullet hairstyle. Exactly. Is that what they used to say about that? It's the mullet of shirts.
Yeah. Business up front, party in the back.
This has been awesome. Cody, where can people find you?
Well, if you love listening to podcasts, you can check out my podcast at The Fi Show. And I've been really active on Instagram. So you can follow me at Cody D. Berman. And then all things digital products, go to goldcityventures.com.
Awesome. We'll link up to all that stuff. And your Instagram stuff recently has been spot on. Very good.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah. No, thanks for having me. This was an absolute blast and I'll have to do it again.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast. And I'm Doug Cunnington, the Balder host. And Carl Jensen is the cool, sexy one. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. Carl and I are just two guys with microphones that sit in my basement and talk. So we'll catch y'all next week.
Oh, that is a good idea. All right, so this is the sound check. So Cody, did you go to the party last night?
I did. I had a lot of fun.
How'd it go? Yeah, it was loud to me. Did you find it?
It was super loud. I got to reconnect with a lot of old friends, made some new friends. Money Lion, shout out.
Yeah.
I know this is just a sound check, so they're not actually getting a shout out, but.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. And then, did you, or what was your favorite part of the opening party?
I was impressed by the grilled cheese wagon. Yeah. I was just expecting, you know, a couple of craft singles on some shitty bread.
Yeah.
They had like buffalo chicken grilled cheese, like barbecue chicken grilled cheese, all these different grilled cheeses. So
it was good. Yeah. I got the, I think it was like dates and goat cheese or something. Did you get that too?
I actually got the buffalo chicken.
Okay.
Big buffalo chicken guy.
How about you? I think I got the bacon one, but that was great as well. And their macaroni and cheese was good too. They came out with those little rolls.
Bacon
and, and
the fire.
Very good.
Yeah. The hot one with the jalapenos. Then they had the barbecue one. It was all good.
Yeah. It was a good party, and I was so scared I was going to completely lose my voice, but I can talk. It sounds like I smoke cigars and drink whiskey all night, but it still works.
That edge.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Get a quick listen.